Today, I want to discuss how this war will end. I cannot predict when this war will end, but I want to make certain predictions about how this war will end, okay? So to first understand how the war is going, let's look at some video clips, all right? So this is President Donald Trump. He's talking about the war.
We hit Qatar, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, Kuwait. Nobody expected that. We were shocked. And the other one, you know, they fought back. They could have yielded. But think of it, if we weren't around, they had tremendous power. They had thousands of missiles, most of which we've terminated. They had thousands of drones. They were making drones and missiles all over the place. We've knocked out most of those factories. So they hit.
Okay, so what he's saying here is, we went in expecting to hit them, kill their leadership, and then they would surrender. We didn't expect them to fight back. We didn't expect them to close the Strait of Hormuz. We didn't expect that they would hit Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, okay? So what he's saying is, we actually didn't have a plan going in. And we really didn't think our enemies would fight back. All right, so this is Donald Trump. Now let's look at his
president's preference is always peace. There does not need to be any more death and destruction. But if Iran fails to accept the reality of the current moment, if they fail to understand that they have been defeated militarily and will continue to be, President Trump will ensure they are hit harder than they have ever been hit before. President Trump does not bluff, and he is prepared to unleash hell.
Okay, so what is she, this is Karen Levitt, and she's the press secretary for the White House. And what she's saying is, look, we've defeated these guys, but for whatever reason, the Iranians don't know that. That's the problem. The problem isn't us. We came in with the right strategy. We did everything right. But for whatever reason, the Iranians, being stupid, don't know they've been defeated. All right?
Never in history has a modern military. Iran had a modern military, a modern navy, a modern air force, modern air defenses, leadership, massive bunker. Never has a modern military been so rapidly and historically obliterated, defeated, from day one with overwhelming firepower. The air campaign that we've conducted, that Israel's conducted alongside us, was one for the history books, truly. And it's because we have a president of the United States that when he sends his warfighters out to fight, he unties their hands to actually go out and close with and destroy the enemy as viciously as possible from moment one. And that's why we see ourselves as part of this negotiation as well. We negotiate with bombs. You have a choice as we loiter over the top of Tehran, as the president talked about your future. The president has made it clear that you will not have a nuclear weapon. The War Department agrees. Our job is to ensure that. And so we're keeping our hand on that throttle. As long as it's hard as it's necessary to ensure the interests of the United States of America are achieved.
Okay, so this is Secretary of War Peter Hegseth, and he represents the Pentagon, the military. And his attitude is, we're winning this war, we are kicking ass, and we don't have to negotiate because we're kicking ass. And we'll continue to do so. All right, so this is the attitude of the military. Now, the U.S. media has been reporting that Donald Trump is seeking an off-ramp. He's seeking negotiations. And what Peter Hegseth says, no, let's negotiate with bombs, man! Okay?
Plan across the administration and at Treasury, we unsanctioned Russian oil. We knew that there were about 130 million barrels on the water, and we created supply that is beyond the Straits of Hormuz. So we anticipated this. We knew that there could be a temporary, and I want to emphasize temporary, choke point there. And there was 130 million barrels of floating storage. In the coming days, we may unsanction the Iranian oil that's on the water. It's about 140 million barrels. So depending on how you count it, that's 10 days to 2 weeks of supply, you know, that the Iranians had been pushing out. That would have all gone to China. In essence, we will be using the Iranian barrels against the Iranians to keep the price down, you know, for the next 10 or 14 days.
Okay, so this is the Secretary of the Treasury, Scott Bessent, okay? And he's responding to a problem, which is the Americans didn't expect that the Iranians would close off the Strait of Hormuz. And so this is affecting oil supply. And so the global economy could be disrupted or even destroyed if this lasts too long. So Scott Bessent says, ha, we knew this was going to happen, and we have a really brilliant plan to destroy the Iranians once and for all. Our plan is this. We're going to let the Iranians sell their oil and make a lot of money. And then they'll be destroyed. Yeah. So the Americans basically unsanctioned Iranian oil. And because of that, the Iranians were able to make $14 billion just like that. The total Iranian military budget for 1 year is $10 billion. Okay? So this is American genius at work. They knew this was gonna happen. They knew the Iranians wanted to destroy the global economy. So the Americans like, we'll just make them rich so they can't destroy the global economy. We got them now. All right.
And yet Iran remains a threat to trade, a threat to the Straits of Hormuz. Then I would argue that we could have years of, you know, above $100, closer to $150 oil.
What happens to the global economy if that happens? How do we see it?
We'll have global recession. If there's a cessation of war, and yet Iran...
Okay, so this is Larry Fink, and he's head of a company called BlackRock, which is the largest asset manager in the world. They control trillions and trillions of dollars. And what he's saying, he's being interviewed by the BBC. What he's saying is, we can't stop this war now, because if we stop this war now, that means that the price of oil will be too high for many, many years. The Iranians will control the Strait of Hormuz, and therefore we must fight this war to the end. What he doesn't address is, well, if you didn't start this war in the first place, you wouldn't have this problem. Because the Iranians would have no pretext to close off the Strait of Hormuz. And the global economy would have been fine. But what he's saying, oh, don't worry about that. The problem is the war has started, and therefore we must fight to the end. Okay? Okay, so this is a drone launched by a Iranian proxy in Iraq flying over an American base. And as you can see, there's nothing stopping it, okay? It's just flying over this American base. It's being remote controlled. It spots two American helicopters and it destroys one of them, okay? Meaning that you have all these American bases throughout the Middle East, and they are vulnerable. They cannot be protected against cheap drones. So from an American perspective, this war will either bankrupt the Americans, or this war will be lost, okay? But it's very hard to fight this war against a determined enemy. So what I want to do now is examine how this war will turn out, okay? So I've said this many times, but the Americans are losing this war. And the main reason is the problem of hubris. And so I want to examine closely what this means strategically, what this means on the battlefield, okay? So war is fought across four dimensions, all right? There is the narrative dimension, meaning global opinion, how history will perceive this war. There is the political dimension, meaning how your allies perceive this war, how your domestic base perceive this war. There's the economic, and then there's the military. If we examine this war closely, the Iranians are fighting a very different war from the Americans. What the Americans are doing is basically they are shifting the narrative, political sphere, and economic sphere to fit their economic strategy, okay? Their economic strategy is decapitation, which forces surrender, right? So what they want to do is they want to not destroy the Iranian leadership, destroy the Iranian economy to force a surrender, in which case the Americans can dictate terms. That is their strategy, and that's about it. And they are forcing the narrative space, the political space, and the economic space to conform to the military strategy, meaning that they expect the allies, NATO, they expect the media, they expect the economy to support their strategy. So, for example, in the political space, Donald Trump has ordered NATO to come and open up the Strait of Hormuz, okay? And also, Donald Trump refuses to acknowledge the fact that this war is very unpopular back in America. In the economic space, what the Americans are trying to do is keep the price of oil low so that it does not disrupt the global economy. And they do that, of course, by unsectioning Russian and Iranian oil, which benefits the Russian and Iranian economies, okay? And in the narrative space, they're basically trying to tell the media to follow the party line. Donald Trump has threatened journalists that if you do not report this war is going well, then I might put you in prison, all right? So this is the American strategy, forcing the narrative, political, and economic spheres to conform to the military strategy. The Iranians have a different approach. The Iranians are using the military in order to impact the economic, political, and narrative spheres. All right, it's complete reverse. So the military strategy is calibrated in a certain way to benefit the Iranian economy, okay? So what I mean by that is that the military is strategically controlling the Strait of Hormuz so that Chinese ships can pass, right? Because Chinese ships are the main buyer of Iranian oil. Also, if you're willing to play ball, like Japan or Qatar or Oman, they will also let your ships pass, okay? So this is being strategic. Politically, the Iranians are trying to split the Gulf states, right? They know that Saudi Arabia and UAE are committed to regime change in Iran, but they know that Qatar and Oman are on the other side, okay? So they're trying to gain as much global leverage as possible within the GCC. And the narrative is they're trying to shape global opinion and trying to make everyone believe that they are on the right side of history. And most people believe that. In fact, you have a lot of Americans who are rooting for the Iranians to win, all right? So this is a very different, these are two very different strategies. All right, so let's talk about the advantages and disadvantages of both strategies. Okay, so from the American perspective, the fact that you have this approach of making the world conform to your military strategy basically means that you lack what we call reflection, okay? meaning that you're not able to sit down with your strategists and discuss how this war is going and how to make changes. But the Iranians are able to do so because the military has to conform to the economic, political, and narrative strategies, okay? Second is flexibility. And what I mean by that is the military strategy, if it's not going well for the Americans, they lack the capacity to reflect and make changes. So what they do is they double down, okay? They accelerate the process of bombing in Iran, even though it's probably not going getting them anywhere. Also, much more importantly, the Americans will choose much more self-destructive, desperate strategies, such as sending ground troops. It is possible by this weekend, ground troops will be sent into Iran, which most military analysts believe to be either counter-effective or suicidal, okay? The Iranians, on the other hand, can adapt their military strategy to the economic and political realities. Okay, so for example, what they're doing now is they're charging tolls to cross the Strait of Hormuz. Okay, and the third difference is the idea of resilience. So in other words, if you make the world and America conform to your military strategy, they won't support you. That means that if you're losing troops and you're losing equipment, it is very hard to replenish, resupply. Whereas it could be opposite in Iran, where because they are winning popular opinion, because their economy is becoming stronger in this process, because they're winning more political allies, they can actually draw on more support from the population, and they can also recruit foreign fighters and foreign support, foreign sympathy for their cause. Okay? So for these reasons, I believe that America is losing this war and that ultimately this war will be lost. When this will happen, we don't know, because America is an empire and they can actually drag us on for at least 20 years. All right? Okay. So now that we've discussed why America will probably lose this war, I want to now shift our focus to discuss how the world will change because of this war. What does the end of this war look like? And to do that, what's really important is to go back to our model of how the world works, okay? So remember, last week we discussed the structure of the world. And at the very core is the empire. Because the empire provides the muscle, the military might, to shape the contours of reality, okay? And then with the empire, you have the finance, okay? Finance includes City of London, Wall Street, Bank of International Settlements, and asset managers, and they are the game masters, okay? Okay, the empire is the muscle, but the finance are the ones who actually set the game. And then this creates the global economy, which is based on the US dollar, right? But you can't actually have people believing that this is the way the game is structured, because then people won't want to play the game. So what you do is you create an additional layer of multilateral organizations, what the Americans like to call the rules-based international order, including the UN and the WTO, okay, and other organizations. But this makes people believe that the way the world is structured is fair, open, and transparent. And you hide the finance and the empire behind multilateral organizations, okay? And then to justify this system, you have the culture, education, and media, which then creates the different legal infrastructure of different nations and the values as well. Okay? So this is how the world is organized. We also discuss how there are these organizations that are above the nation state, that are above the system in order to benefit from the system, to keep it going, but also to extract rent from it. And these include intelligence, crime, and science. We also discuss how the organizing forces behind intelligence, crime, and science are transnational capital, secret societies, as well as elite families. And we discuss how they are bounded together by a concept called the occult, which we'll study later on, okay? But the idea of the occult, okay? So this is the structure of the world. Now, once this world is created, what you need to understand is that the people in the different spheres who benefit from the system, first and foremost, their interest is maintaining that status quo, okay? So their interest is in maintaining the status quo. Alright? So basically, they want the system to continue. The problem with the system is, at the core, is an empire that will probably lose the war in Iran. And this creates a problem, because if the empire falls, then it's possible that this entire edifice falls as well. So the only solution is to replace the empire, the American empire, with another empire. All right? That is able to provide the muscle for this system. And this empire, I've argued in the past, is of course Israel. And this will become Pax Judaica. Okay? So, on the surface, it seems like this war is one between the United States and Iran. But in reality, what this war really is about is a war between the United States and Israel, where the American empire has become corrupt, incompetent, and arrogant. And so now Israel sees an opportunity to replace the American empire in the system. And it's something that eventually every aspect of the system will agree to do. All right? So the main outcome of this war, when it ends, is that Israel will replace America in the Middle East. Okay? All right. So let me first discuss why the American empire is falling. Okay? And the main reason is the idea of something called the military industrial complex. So, for most of its history, America did not have a professional army. Why? Because the founding fathers and most American citizens believed that if there's a standing army, if there's a professional army, that's a direct threat to the liberty of the Americans, okay? Because the Americans fought a war, the Revolutionary War, to get rid of the professional army that was the British. Okay, so Americans do not like a professional army. But in order to fight World War I and World War II, they didn't have a choice but to create a standing army. The problem is that after America won World War II, the apparatus stayed. And the apparatus wanted to maintain the status quo, meaning they wanted access to unlimited government funds. So this led to the Cold War, and the Cold War was a justification for the MIC, the military industrial complex, to get as much government funding as possible. And the blue, as you can see, is government expenditures. Okay, we can understand why they spent all this money in World War II, because they were fighting a war to save America and to save the world. But as you can see, even though it dropped drastically at the end of the war, starting with the Cold War, you have this uptick, okay? And then you have the Vietnam War. And then after America won the Cold War, you saw this massive uptick. And this is something called the War on Terror. So the military industrial complex is always looking to start wars in order to justify its existence. So there's a very famous journalist named Julian Assange, and he said this about America. The point is not to have successful wars. The point is not to win wars. The point is to have never-ending wars, which allows the military-industrial complex to transfer American taxpayer money to a transnational elite. Okay? It's basically the point of wars is for the military-industrial complex to steal as much money as possible from America. Okay? America spends a lot of money in its military. Okay? America accounts for 41% of all global military spending. Who's next? China. China spends 8.2%. Russia, which is America's main military enemy, only spends 4.1%. Okay? Meaning that Russia spends 1/10 the amount of money that America spends. And you think that, okay, well, all this means is that America is invincible. But what people don't recognize is the level of corruption within the American military. The American military is probably the most corrupt institution in the world, by far. No one even comes close, okay? September 10th, 2001, Donald Rumsfeld, who's the Secretary of Defense for the Americans, he's head of the Pentagon, and this is a day before September 11th, the 9/11 attacks, he said that, he had a press conference, and he said that, look, we've looked at the Pentagon books, okay? We're trying to do an accounting of the Pentagon military spending, and we can't find $2 trillion. There's $2 trillion missing from the budget. It went somewhere, we don't know where, but it went somewhere, okay? All right, so this is a, so where does the money go? It goes to private contractors, okay? These are all private companies that make a lot of money off the government, okay? So listen at the Boeing company. They had in 1 year, $20 billion. From the government. They got $20 billion in contracts from the government, okay? To do so, they had to spend $16 million in order to lobby Congress through advertisements, through political campaigns. And then they bribe, this is a bribe to politicians. They spent $2 million, okay? So this is a really good business to be in. You spend $2 million you give them bribes to politicians, then you spend $16 million on campaigns, and then you make $20 billion, okay? This is extremely profitable. The difference, of course, is being picked up by the American taxpayer. The Boeing company is not just a defense contractor, but also makes civilian airplanes. And for these past few years, there's been quite a few cases of civilian airplanes falling out of the sky made by Boeing, okay? So for example, the Boeing 737 MAX, okay? There was a recall because there were some engineering issues with the plane. Now, there have been a couple of whistleblowers who've come out and tried to say that Boeing is a very corrupt company. And for whatever reason, they died, okay? They just disappeared. We don't know why, but when they were about to testify against Boeing, they somehow died, all right? This is a really interesting story that shows you the level of corruption in the Pentagon. There is this woman who's a contractor for the Army, and she stole $103 million, okay? That's a lot of money, $103 million. She stole it. The Army didn't know, and she kept on stealing, and no one seemed to care in the Army. But then the IRS, this is the Internal Revenue Service. They recognized that she was getting all this money from somewhere, so they investigated her and recognized, oh my God, she's stealing from the Army. So the IRS told the Army, and that's when the Army recognized, oh, we have a problem, okay? The fact that the Army didn't notice that she was stealing $103 million tells you, actually, theft in the military is probably a very common thing. All right? So ultimately, what this means is that this corruption in the Pentagon is not really sustainable. Okay? So let me discuss why this is a problem for America in Iraq. Okay? So right now, America is facing three major issues with this war in Iran. The first major issue is the lack of political will, meaning that this war is very unpopular in America. Only 40% of the population currently support this war, and as things go on and on, support will probably decrease. Okay? You need political will because you need Americans to pay for this war. Trump has asked for $200 billion to fund this war, and also it's possible that Trump will call the natural draft, which I believe will happen. Okay? So if Americans don't want to support this war, it's very hard to get them to pay for this war and to go fight this war. Second problem is lack of manufacturing capacity. So in other words, what this means is that if you lose planes, if you spend too many, if you use too many bombs, you cannot replenish it because you don't have the factories to produce these planes and bombs quickly enough. Okay? And so if this war drags on too long, then America will just run out of bombs. Now, and the third problem for America is unwillingness to sustain casualties. Okay? And what this means is that Americans, the American military is afraid of reporting deaths, casualties, which is weird because in a war, soldiers die. That's just the reality of war. But the Pentagon is afraid of reporting too many deaths because of the fair political backlash. Okay? So these are three major problems for the American military in Iran. These are the three major constraints. All right? So the Americans can't actually resolve these issues. America will probably lose this war, in which case, this gives opportunity for Israel to prove to the world that it should be the empire. Okay? And it proves it can be the empire by showing that it does have the political will, it doesn't have the manufacturing capacity, but that's Mossad, okay? And it is much more strategic. The last thing is that it is resilient, meaning that it is willing to accept casualties, okay? So basically, the idea here is the global elite, they need an empire to provide the muscle, but the empire must prove that it can serve the needs of the global elite, okay? So an empire must prove three things. First of all, it must prove unity. It must prove it has the resources and the capacity. Basically the capacity, okay? And it must prove determination. So to understand this idea, let's just do a thought experiment, right? Let's just say that we're venture capitalists. We have billions of dollars, we have trillions of dollars, and we want to invest in a company, okay? So we're approached by two companies. Company A, company B, okay? So company A comes to us and says that, look, I have 100 companies. And they're all profitable, okay? I don't have a business plan, but I have lots and lots of resources, and I have a lot of experience and a lot of skill, and so if I were to invest in another company, I'm sure it'll make a lot of money, okay? All right, so skills and experience. That is company A. Company B is these young guys, and they failed, okay? But they're like, you know what? We're going to put our heart and soul into this enterprise. We're going to work 16 hours a day, every day, for as long as it takes. And we won't stop. Okay? Even if this company is successful, we're going to keep on going because it's our passion. And if this company fails, then we're bankrupt. We might kill ourselves. All right? So if you are the venture capitalist, do you put your money in A or do you put your money in B? Now, most people would put their money in A because they think it is low risk. But if you're a smart venture capitalist, you put your money in B because it's high reward. Okay? So company A already has 100 companies that are successful. People in the company don't really care if this new enterprise is successful or not. Who cares, right? I can afford to lose. In which case, it's more likely the company A steals your money than actually invest it properly. Whereas company B is going to be the opposite, where this is their last chance. If they take your money, they're going to make sure that they grow it. Because if they don't grow it, then they themselves die. Okay? So you need these things. You need unity, capacity, and determination. Do you understand? And so what Issue is doing really, especially auditioning to the world, we are ready to replace America. We are ready to be the new empire. Okay? All right. So let's look at what's happening. America has this MIC. And so the MIC, Military Industrial Complex, what they're good at doing is producing very expensive weapon systems. But unfortunately, when you actually put these weapon systems into war, it doesn't really do anything, okay? So this is the Patriot missile system that's supposed to protect the GCC and Israel and the American military bases from Iranian drones and missiles. Guess what, guys? Doesn't really work, okay? In fact, as you can see from the video, the Iranians can basically fly drones anywhere in the Middle East, and the Americans can't really stop them. All right, so this is billions of dollars, doesn't really do anything. This is called the F-35. The F-35 is the most advanced fighter jet in the whole world. It has stealth technology, meaning you can't actually lock onto it using radar. This costs $100 million each. Took 26 years to develop. So you would think, wow, it took 26 years, so this must be really, really good. No, it took 26 years because the MIC is really corrupt and they want to steal as much money as possible. Okay? And in this war, the Iranians have already shot down at least one of these jets. Okay? This is not supposed to happen. You're not supposed to be able to shoot these things down. The Iranians have shot it down using very low radar. Again, these things, they're not designed to win wars. They're designed to steal as much money as possible from the American taxpayer. Okay? Now, the last example is the Gerald Ford. This ship cost $13 billion. It costs $13 billion. The annual defense budget for the Iranians is $10 billion. It goes into the war theater, and 3 weeks afterwards, it has to run away, okay? And in fact, the Americans say, oh, the Gerald Ford, this is the most advanced supercarrier in the world. It's probably going to be down for repairs the next 2 years. And there's argument as to what happened, okay? There are three different possibilities. The first possibility is that there was an accident in the laundry room, and there's a fire, and this fire spread throughout the carrier, okay? Which means that actually the carrier is not very resilient, okay? So that's one possibility, and that's what the official story is. But there are also others who say, like, the Iranians hit the ship with a missile. And so the Gerald Ford can't protect itself from Iranian missiles, so it ran away. Okay? The third possibility, the third explanation is the Pentagon recognized that there are severe limitations of the Gerald Ford in actual combat operations. Its radar, its guidance system are all very limited. So the Pentagon withdrew the Gerald Ford because it was absolutely useless in war. Right? Whichever story is true, it doesn't paint a good picture of the American military. $13 billion, and this does nothing, okay? It's just a white elephant. The Iranians are there. And also, this is Iwo Jima. And this came in World War II in the Pacific Theater when the Americans were fighting the Japanese. And this is the height of American military glory, okay? It took about 6,000. The Americans lost 6,000 Marines in taking this island. And that's a sacrifice you need in order to win wars. You're going to lose a lot of soldiers. And Americans are proud that they were willing to make the sacrifice necessary to win the war. The problem is Americans are no longer willing to sustain casualties, okay? So the Americans sent about 5,000, around 5,000 Marines to Iran, hoping that 5,000 Marines will be enough to win this war, okay? But it just shows you the Americans have no strategy to win this war, and they don't want to make the necessary sacrifices to win this war. They want to win this war as quickly and as cheaply as possible, okay? The Israelis are different, okay? This is Gaza. And we all know that what Gaza did was terrible. But again, if you are auditioning to be an empire, Gaza is proof of concept, okay? Meaning it's showing the global elite, look, we're willing to do what it takes to win this war and defend the empire, okay? So this was a tremendous tragedy, and that's all war crimes, okay? And the entire world is aghast. But if you look at Israeli public opinion, 82% support expelling all Palestinians from Gaza, okay? 66% believe Amalek exists today. Amalek exists like Israel has this great enemy that they must defeat, right? So 66% of Israelis believe that this war against Gaza is a war for the very existence of Israel. Okay, this is unity. This is determination. The Americans don't have this. Most Americans oppose what Israel is doing in Gaza. But Israelis themselves support what's going on, okay? So there's unity, right? All right, so in 2024, there was the famous Lebanon pager attack, okay? Meaning that the Israelis were able to implant bombs into pagers that went to Hezbollah members, and then it blew up, okay? And maybe from a military perspective, it didn't accomplish that much. From a psychological perspective, it accomplished a lot, okay? It scared the living hell out of Hezbollah. It made them paranoid, and also made the world respect Israel more. And Israel spent $275 million to conduct this operation. That took decades to implement, okay? And you're like, okay, why is Israel telling us this? Because again, Israel is auditioning to be the new empire. It's telling the global elite, look, not only will we fight this war for you, not only will we be your muscle, but we'll do it cheaply, man. Not billions of dollars, millions of dollars. This is ISIS. ISIS is Islamic State, okay? And this is considered a terrorist organization. These Sunni extremists who go around and beheading people. Right? Now, this is from the New York Times, and the yellow tells you areas in which they operate. And as you can see, it's really across the Middle East. And the red are incidents of attacks directed by ISIS. Okay. Now, something that's really funny about all this is ISIS attacks everywhere in the Middle East except for one country, and that country is Israel. Okay? Really funny how you have these Muslim extremists going around committing all sorts of atrocities everywhere in the Middle East except Israel. And so that's why a lot of people believe that Islamic State is actually a creation of Mossad. But again, Israel is happy for the world to know this because again, Israel is auditioning to be the new empire. And what Israel is saying is, we don't have to use the American strategy of just bombing everyone to death. okay? That's expensive, that's brutal, and it's not very strategic. We can use Mossad to infiltrate groups and use these groups against the comrades, their neighbors. Is that much more efficient? Is that much more effective? Okay? So what Israel is saying is, we are much better at controlling the Middle East than the Americans. So let us control the Middle East using our strategies. Okay? This is a story of a Mossad agent who was disguised as an ISIS preacher. Okay? And this happens a lot. There are lots of stories where you have these ISIS commanders or agents, and when you arrest them, you discover, okay, actually, they're actually Mossad, okay? So ISIS is basically a Mossad operation. All right, so the main story here is, okay, if you look at history, the relationship between Israel and America is actually pretty simple. Israel is the pit bull for America. The problem with an empire as it grows old is it doesn't want to do bad things. Okay? It wants to feel good about itself. Therefore, it subcontracts the violence, the murder, the genocide to different people, okay? To mercenaries, the Israelis in the Middle East. And this is a pattern throughout human history. So the Romans started out as mercenaries for the Etruscans in Italy. The Aztecs started out as mercenaries for the Colchicans in Mexico. The Greeks started out as mercenaries for the Persians, okay? The Mongols started out as mercenaries for the Chinese. The Akkadians started out as mercenaries for the Sumerians. The Mamluks started out as mercenaries for the Ayyubid dynasty in Egypt. In every instance, what happened is the mercenaries eventually got to the point where we are the ones killing ourselves for this empire. The empire is corrupt, decadent, and weak. Why don't we just take it over? And they did, okay? We're seeing a similar situation play out today in the Middle East, where Israel was created by the British and Americans to be their pit bull, to be their aircraft carrier in the Middle East, to create as much instability as possible so that the Americans and the British could control their oil supply in the Middle East. And this has gone on for decades, and now the Israelis are like, wait a minute here, we're the ones doing all the work, we're the ones making all the sacrifices, we're the ones that are getting all the hate in this world, so why shouldn't we be the empire now? America's useless. Okay? All right, so this is a pattern throughout human history. And so we're going to look at what this means. Okay, so Israel has something called the Greater Israel Project. And this is what extremists in Israel believe. They believe that God in the Bible promised the entire Middle East to the Jewish people, okay? Extending from the Nile in Egypt all the way to the Euphrates in Iraq, okay? And it also encompasses Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and parts of Turkey as well, okay? Now, something really funny about this map is this. Iran, Persia, is not part of the Greater Israel Project. So then you ask yourself, wait a minute here. If Iran is actually not part of the Greater Israel Project, then why is Israel going to war with Iran? Well, the reason why is, if they want all this territory, their main enemy is not Syria, that's been destroyed. It's not Iraq, that's been destroyed. It's not Saudi Arabia, it's too weak. Not Jordan, it's too weak. Not Egypt, it's too weak. Not Lebanon, it's too weak, okay? Their main enemy is the American Empire, okay? In the Greater Israel Project, it's the Americans that control the land of Greater Israel, the Middle East. These are American bases. So, in other words, you use this war against Iran to destroy the American Empire. How? By forcing the American Empire to go and invade Iran. And when this happens, America will be too overextended, and then they'll be forced to retreat from the Middle East. Okay? And so, eventually, America will be defeated. America will be forced to retreat from the Middle East. And I will leave two regional powers, okay? Iran and Israel. And again, because of the Greater Israel Project, the Israelis have no problem with this. Persia is, again, not part of the Greater Israel Project. The Israelis don't really care if Iran is still standing. They want Iran to be as weakened as possible, okay? But they really don't need to defeat Iran to achieve the biblical prophecy. But they do need to defeat the Americans. All right, the Americans are in the way. All right, okay, so what does the Greater Israel Project mean? Well, it means control of the world's oil, basically, 20% of the world's oil. So these are the gas fields. The yellow are the gas fields of the Middle East, all right? And the blue are the trade routes. So you can see how Israel is at the very center of all this wealth, right? They have the logistics, they have the technology. It makes sense for them to take control of all these resources and then start shipping these resources to Europe as well as to East Asia, China, South Korea, and Japan, okay? So that's what the Pax Judaica will look like. It will be a trade network controlling all the resources of the Middle East, and then shipping it off to the rest of the world. All right. Then you have data centers, okay? So Israel has the most data centers in the Middle East, and then Saudi Arabia has 36. UAE has 34, okay? So these three places are competing against each other for AI dominance. Why is AI important? Because it allows you to create a surveillance state. Surveillance is what you need for an empire, right? You need to control the population, all right? Now, the problem with Saudi Arabia and UAE is for them to build their data centers, they need to import foreign expertise. They themselves do not have the human capital to build these data centers and to run these data centers. On the other hand, Israel does. Okay? Israel has the best universities in the Middle East. It has the best IT talent in the Middle East. It has the best human capital. Therefore, it makes perfect sense for Israel to just absorb the entire AI network of the Middle East and become the main epicenter of AI surveillance in the Middle East, okay? Which will become the backbone of Pax Judaica. One more. So what does Pax Judaica look like? It's really the India-Middle East trade corridor, okay? All right, so look at this map where for India to get to Europe, it has to go through Israel, okay? So this is what Pax Judaica will look like. Basically, the IMAC trade corridor that will unite the sub-Asian continent with Europe, okay? But not only that, but the idea of this is also to connect to Africa, right? Because no other place is able to access Africa. Only Israel is. And not only that, but it's also able to access Ukraine and Russia. So the idea is to take Russian and Ukraine energy and food and then transport it into Africa. That's combining the world. Okay? So Israel, because of its location, can really be the epicenter of all global trade. All right. Now, let's look at Iran. So for the longest time, Iran did have lots of resources, oil resources. But the Americans put sanctions on these oil exports. This war has basically lifted all sanctions, okay? So the Iranian economy is now able to export its oil all across the world. So this is Trini Parsi, and he is probably America's foremost expert on Iran. And he talks to a lot of people. And what he's saying is basically, Iran now is able to produce oil, transport it across the world, and then get money for it, okay? So what the conclusion he makes is this. Trump and Israel's war has ended up delivering Iran de facto sanctions relief. Before the war, Iran was cut off from the global economy. Because of this war, Iran now is becoming embedded into the global economy. It's the complete opposite of the intention of this war. And what this means is Iran is now less incentivized to end the war. Okay? The more this war keeps on going, the more Iran benefits economically. All right. So Iran, once this war ends, becomes the epicenter of two major trade networks. Okay, the first is something called the North-South Transport Corridor that links Russia, okay, and Iran together, okay? And this will then allow Russia to access India and Asia and allow Iran to access Europe, okay? So this is the North-South corridor that's controlled by Russia. But also, you have, of course, the Belt and Road Initiative. And guess what? Tehran is also at the epicenter of this trade network, okay? So for China to access Europe, it has to go through Iran. For Europe to access China, it has to go through Tehran as well, okay? So this is what the new world will look like after the war. You'll have two regional powers, Israel and Iran, and they will have their own independent trade networks, and they will have their own access to resources. So Israel will control the resources of the Middle East, and Iran will control the Strait of Hormuz, okay? And with the Strait of Hormuz, they can collect a toll, which will feed the economy. They will be helped by Russia and China, because it is in Russia and China's best interest to develop the infrastructure of Iran to facilitate global trade, okay? But then you're like, wait a minute here, but Iran and Israel are enemies. Okay, so this is a misunderstanding. Ideologically, Iran and Israel are enemies. But I want to teach you three basic principles or rules of geopolitics, okay? And once you understand these rules, it'll be much easier for you to understand the new world that we're going into. The first is this. The strong respect each other and prey on the weak, okay? This makes sense, right? Why are the strong fighting each other? Wouldn't it be easier for them to like leave each other alone and go pick on the weak? It benefits everyone, right? So in this situation, right, you have different countries. You have GCC, you have Israel, you have the United States, you have Iran, okay? So you have these four different players in this war. Right now, it's essentially Israel, GCC, and US fighting against Iran. But if Iran proves it is strong, and Israel proves it's strong, and GCC proves it's weak, the US proves it's weak, guess what's gonna happen? Israel and Iran are gonna get together and say, screw these guys. Let's just work together, man. Okay, does that make sense? Even though in the beginning, it seems as though Israel, GCC, and US are allies against Iran, ultimately, if Iran is able to prove it's strong, then Israel will abandon the GCC and the United States. And Israel will work with Iran to build a new order in the Middle East. Because that's the law of the jungle. Okay? That is what is in the best interest, according to game theory, for Israel. And the last thing to understand is the weak do not work well together. The weak must ally with the strong for protection, okay? So what this means is that GCC is weak, right? So you look at Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, Oman, Kuwait, Qatar, okay? So these are the six GCC countries. They're all weak. And you would think, you know what? If they were to combine their resources and fight together, they could probably beat Israel or probably beat Iran. The problem with this is weak players don't work well together, okay? They're weak because they're stupid. They are, and so what they do is, rather than seek to work together, what they do is they seek to ally with stronger forces, okay? So right now, they're all aligned with the United States and Israel, all right, against Iran. But as this war progresses and the U.S. falls, then what will happen is that they must either choose Israel or Iran. And what's going to happen is that you might have some places, Qatar and Oman, who choose, you know what, screw this, we're going to join Iran. And you have Saudi Arabia and UAE who are like, okay, let's join Israel. Okay? But the GCC, regardless of what happens, will no longer be a major geopolitical factor in the Middle East anymore. A lot of them will be destroyed because of this war. All right? So according to game theory, this is what the world should look like after the war ends. But again, this is all theory, okay? This is a class focused on intellectual speculation. It's meant to be fun. It's meant to make us more curious about the world. It's supposed to heighten our critical thinking skills. This is not meant to be prophecy, okay? I'm not saying this must happen. I'm saying this might happen for these reasons. And if they do happen then this provides us a good framework to understand our reasoning better, okay? If it doesn't work out this way, it's fine because we'll just go back and analyze what went wrong better, okay? What's really important is not to set a judgment. What's really important is keep our minds open and be open to the possibility of different outcomes, all right? Okay, any questions, guys?
If Israel really defeated America, what will...
No. I didn't say Israel will defeat America. I never said that. Okay?
Well, Israel might.
No. Let's be clear about language. I did not say Israel will fight America. What I said is Israel is auditioning to replace America. Israel is trying to prove to global elite, I'm strong enough to replace America when America leaves the Middle East. You understand?
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Let's be clear about language. Okay, yes?
What will, Israel try to prove that it's stronger than America? And I'm curious, what the next step Israel will take if, it's trying to show that it's strong?
Okay. All right. So, look. Israel doesn't have to do anything different. Israel is determined to win this war, right? That's all it has to do. Israel is determined to win this war, and the United States is not determined to win this war. This doesn't even know what it's doing, okay? All right, so what's important, okay? What's really important is to go back to our analysis of... All right. Okay, let's our analysis, okay? Remember, you need an empire. You need an empire, okay? Then you have the finance, the game masters. And then you have the global economy. Okay, all right. So these different players. And again, there's a really important idea to understand. All these players are interested in maintaining a status quo. Eventually, as this war progresses, they're going to recognize that America is actually a problem. The American empire is not a good thing. It's not a benefit to us. It's a problem for us. And so we need to replace the American empire, right? And who's the only alternative? Israel. So we need to transition from America to Israel if we are to maintain the system. Then to recognize that, okay, the problem though is America will not go away. Empires don't surrender power willingly. And so we need to create a situation in which America is forced out of the Middle East. Now, Iran cannot defeat America on the battlefield. America can drag this thing on for at least 20 years. But we don't want to wait 20 years because we'll lose a lot of money in the process. And there's no point in waiting 20 years. So we need to force America out of the Middle East. So if Iran cannot defeat America on the battlefield, what we need to do is cause America to implode. We need to cause a collapse in America. And how do you do that? The economy. If I crash the stock market, if I cause oil to go way up, if I cause a discontent in America, this will cause a civil war in America. And then the American military has no choice but to retreat back into America, okay? And then Israel will naturally take over from America. And this is something we'll discuss next class, okay? The strategy for how to destroy the American empire and replace it with Israel. All right? Okay, does that make sense? Okay, any more questions, guys? Okay, great. So I will see you next week, okay?